This is Weekend Edition. I'm Leanne Hansen. 50 years ago today, the fighting in Europe stopped. In the war room of General Eisenhower's headquarters, a red brick boys' school in Reims, France, German General Alfred Jodl signed the surrender. It went into effect the next day, May 8th. For American soldiers, it was the end of a long 4 years, years in which some grew up, some were imprisoned, some became leaders, and many died. Every survivor was changed by the war, some in obvious ways, some in much more subtle ones. For us, their children, our fathers' war was often a mystery, shrouded in either boisterous stories or simple silence. Phil Smith is luckier than many. A listener from Wheaton, Illinois, Phil wrote to us last year about his father's experiences in the war. We were touched and encouraged Phil to turn his written words into spoken ones.
My father fought in World War II. Like many veterans, he didn't talk about it much. I guess he felt that what he saw and did was nothing special, or that everybody who served, especially in combat, shared something that couldn't be communicated to anyone who wasn't there. I think there was more to it. I think he was seeking comfort, and I'll tell you what I mean by that. During the war, Dad wrote letters home to my mother in Jacksonville, Florida, and she saved them. Many years later, he typed them, some 300 pages in all. And there was more. That same time, he wrote up some of his experiences as short stories. Maybe he thought about publishing them, but he never did. He never said anything about it. These mounds of letters and stories sat on a shelf until shortly before he died, when I found them. As I read, I was stunned by the detail and power of the writing. They're eyewitness accounts, no strategy, no theory, just soldiers living day by day, no pretense, no big picture. To me, they're a window to a part of my father I hadn't known, and a window to his generation. What I learned through these letters and stories makes me laugh, cry, and marvel at the enormity of their task and how they survived it. These were young men, yanked out of their normal lives and thrust into a deadly adventure, but one with a purpose. They clung to each other to get through. They fought and died and wept together. I wish I could comfort them, as they comforted one another 50 years ago. My father was Percy Smith, 1st Sergeant, Company G, 317th Infantry, 80th Division, U.S. 3rd Army. He came as a replacement after the company was all but wiped out in France. His letters tell about the routine conditions of military life, the boredom and the edgy fatigue that comes from hiking and sleeping in mud and snow, and the nerve-wracking terror of war. The times come to life.
My darling wife, I went up to join my regiment last September when we were fighting around Metz in France. We rode in boxcars with no top, crammed in with all our baggage and several cases of sea rations. We rode for 3 days and nights and nearly froze. When it wasn't freezing, it was raining. We had 40 men in each boxcar and didn't have enough room to sit down. We took turns trying to sleep on the floor of the jolting train. I think one of the wheels was flat, too. There were no toilets, and the only way we could relieve ourselves was when the train stopped. The men were bashful at first, but after a day passed, they didn't care. We had a canteen of water which was for drinking and washing for 3 days. You can imagine how much washing we did. But then why wash? When we got close to Metz, we could hear the big guns, like thunder. On the tracks next to us were miles of hospital cars, crammed full, and a steady stream of ambulances were coming up and discharging stretcher after stretcher. On the next track was trainload after trainload of ammunition. It wasn't a very pleasant sight for us replacements. After that, even the most boisterous were pretty calm and quiet. The next day, I was put on a truck and sent forward to join my company. When I arrived, they were trying to see who was left in the company, as all but 24 had been killed or captured the day before.
As I read the letters, I saw my father as I never had before. I was moved to think in new ways about the man I knew as mild-tempered, well-liked, and humorous. I felt a slowly growing sense, an unsudden surprise, that my father was who he was, not in spite of, but because of these experiences.
My dear wife, take a good look at this postcard. The city is Mainz, and the river is the Rhine. This is where we crossed. The idea was to slip across shortly after midnight and taken by surprise. Well, when our boats reached the middle of the river, the moon came out bright as day. The Germans opened up on us with machine guns and anti-aircraft cannon. That was one of the bloodiest engagements we've had since Luxembourg. Every boat had dead and dying men in them when they finally landed. The bank was a brick seawall, and those that were able to make the shore were caught in a crossfire of machine guns. I don't know how we did it, but we gained a foothold and held on till dawn's early light. The Germans fought like wildcats to push us back into the river. They killed every prisoner they took. But our waves of boats kept on coming, and by dawn we had built up enough power to drive them back. I guess even Hitler's Superman got goggle-eyed at that. You remember his SS were the special army he created, and those are the boys we like to get. They're the gang that burned Lidice and killed everybody in it. Most of the SS troops we catch don't seem much like Supermen to me. The other day, a section of my company had to surrender to them, and they were all shot through the head. When we catch these bastards, I have to almost threaten to shoot our men to keep them from tearing them limb from limb.
This was the father who taught me to fly a kite and catch a baseball. And here he was, part of something that made a difference in the world. I'm proud of him, proud of them all. When I look at his grandchildren, Molly, Andy, Lucy, I know they almost weren't here at all. When I watch my daughter in a high school play, there's a catch in my throat as I realize just how close I came to not being in that audience or she on that stage. The link between your parents' survival and your own existence is obvious, but holding these pages in my hand gives me a special awareness about being here. The stories he compiled after the war sometimes focused on specific men, like Sergeant Joe Moores. Dad helped him write love letters home. Joe was killed during the Battle of the Bulge. And sometimes they focus on a single day, like January 21st, 1945.
The German guns found us as we toiled over the wooded hill. Exploding shells burst in flashes of flame, framed in black smoke. Thunderous, ear-splitting blasts churned up geysers of dirt, tree limbs, and debris. An acrid, smoky odor permeated the atmosphere. The soldiers dashed for cover. Whoomp, 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 screaming shells filled the air. Lethal, whining shell fragments rained on the terrified soldiers. Dead and dying soldiers littered the line of march. Amidst cries of medic, medic, one soldier was calling for his mama. Over the clamor, he cried in plaintive tones, "Mama, mama." Suddenly there was a lull. Bursting shells moved to another sector. I cautiously peered from my place of refuge, a slight depression in the ground. The soldier crying "Mama" was a few feet from me. It was Private Alfred Miller. He lay on his back, helmet missing, and his face streaked by smoke. His legs had been ripped from his body, and his overcoat was soaked with blood. I stared at the dying soldier. His bleary eyes flickered. He saw me kneeling and cried, "Mama! Oh, Mama, thank God you came!" Private Miller, a new replacement, had been court-martialed for disciplinary reasons and transferred to Company G. Eagerly, he grasped for my arm. He missed, but succeeded in clutching my overcoat sleeve. His voice became shrill and pleading, "Mama! Mama! Please don't leave me and sister again." I attempted to free myself, but his grip on my sleeve tightened. "Mama, don't leave me, please." The dying soldier became a frightened little boy. I heard my voice saying, "There, there, just take it easy." "Oh, Mama," he whimpered, "why did you leave us?" Sister cried and cried because she was hungry. He added like a little man, "But I found something for me and sister in garbage cans. We cried, but you didn't come back. A lady came and said me and sister'd have to go to the orphan home." The shelling returned. I was gripped with fear as whistling, whooping shells screamed and burst in the treetops. I burrowed in the ground. I quaked in terror as shell fragments ripped my pack and overcoat. Ice oozed from my punctured canteen. Another lull. Private Miller was babbling, "Mama? Mama," he cried, "me and sister won't have to go to the orphan home now, will we? Will we, huh?" I swallowed a lump in my throat. "No. You won't have to go anywhere. Ever." Private Miller's voice grew weak. "Mama, I'm sleepy. Good night, sister. Good night, Mama." I was freeing my overcoat sleeve with my trench knife when Lieutenant Damkovich waved his arm and yelled, "Let's go, G Company, move it!"
My dad was an older soldier, already 30, old enough to have seen the Depression up close. Brought up by a single mother without means, I believe he understood Private Miller and forged a link with him that never broke. The more I read, the more I became aware that my father, like many veterans, many survivors of the war, had every reason to be bitter and pessimistic about human nature. But he wasn't, not that he ever revealed to me. And I believe a father conveys to a child what he hopes is true and what he wants to be true about the world. The complete story of that day in 1945, when Private Miller died, is long and continues with details of utter confusion and terror. This is from a letter to my mother describing that same day.
That night, a jeep came up with ammunition and rations, and they brought the mail. Some of the men got Christmas packages, and they just put them in their packs. We started out through the swirling snow, almost waist-deep, to attack the town. We had to climb into the mountains first, and that's where the enemy saw us and covered the hill with artillery, killing our men wholesale as there was nothing we could do to protect ourselves. Our colonel was killed, and all of his staff, and the mission was a complete failure, so we decided to go back to where we started. But then there were the wounded. We gathered them all together and carried them back. One of the fellows, Private Bueller, had his leg blown off, but the first aid men stopped the blood from flowing, and he was conscious. He had received his little box for Christmas and asked for it. The men had all they could do to carry the wounded, but they did as he requested and gave him his present. He held it in his arms like a kid with a teddy bear when he goes to sleep. After nightfall, when the last of the wounded were moved, I left with my group. On the way back over the hills, we could see the stretchers sitting. As men died in transit, those carrying them put them down as their help was needed for those still alive. About halfway back, I saw Private Bueller with the little box in his arms. He was lying on a stretcher beside the trail. He still had the box in his arms. He never got a chance to open it. Snow was collecting on his face as I pulled his blanket over him. Every time I receive a package, I can't help but think of that poor fellow.
Every year, on January 21st, I read the story of that day in 1945. It's a small way for me to honor those men and all those who served. This year, on the 50th year, January 21st was a cold, snowy day in Illinois. I bundled in a wool overcoat and walked to the local veterans' memorial in the little town of Glen Ellen. I settled at the base of the memorial and pulled out my copy of the story. I read it carefully, brushing falling snow off the pages along with the tears which didn't freeze on my face. At the end, I was exhausted. I knelt at the memorial and said a prayer and left a copy of the story there. The following day was a Sunday. I selected a church at random. I wanted to be alone, as alone and silent as my father had remained all those years. I felt reverence for those lives not lived beyond that day 50 years ago, and for the comfort my father gave when he became Private Miller's mother. As I entered the sanctuary, I realized what I was seeking, a memorial service for those men who had died. I wanted to say thank you. By the end of the service, my eyes were red, for I knew that my father had taken Private Miller, Private Bueller, and Sergeant Moores with him for the rest of his life. It's very clear to me that veterans and victims of that war still seek comfort for those they had to leave behind. These stories continue to bring my father and me together. Like any father, there were some things he always kept to himself, things we never talked about. But in these letters and stories, he did let me enter his reality, to feel at risk along with him, to know his mind and to feel his heart. I'm very lucky, because each time I read these, I'm there by his side.
May 7, 1945. Dear Elizabeth, our radio called, and Lieutenant Damkowicz was muttering to himself as he went over, "Why don't they leave us alone? Every time we stop, we have to move again." We picked up the transmitter and reported. Battalion headquarters replied, "As of 4:10, the war in Europe is officially over." The transmitter clicked, and Lieutenant Damkowicz stood dazed for a moment. And then he said, "George 6 to White 6, Roger." He hollered, "Smitty? Smitty, it's over. It's over." When I realized what we heard, I had a strange feeling of exultation. And then I didn't feel like celebrating for some reason. I felt so sorry for my comrades that were killed and wounded, and also for the enemy, as they had suffered the same as we did. I'm still dazed, as it doesn't seem possible. I gave a silent prayer, and the chaplain just said we're going to have a Thanksgiving service tomorrow. I think he will have a good attendance.
The words of Sergeant Percy Smith, presented by his son, Phil Smith, and read by actor Richard Bauer. In one of his letters to us, Phil included the 317th Infantry's report of events for May 7, 1945. It reads, "Company received message of cessation of hostilities, 1550 hours, 7 May 45. After a short prayer of thanksgiving, company entrucked at Hofern, Austria, and rode approximately 30 miles to Spital, Austria. Mission to guard and protect property and direct traffic of Axis prisoners to proper destination. Weather, mild. Morale, excellent." This is NPR's Weekend Edition.